Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Compass. My name is Chris. I'm the pastor here. And today we're kicking off a brand new series called Heart Problems. And before we start, I definitely want to welcome those of you who are in the theater next door at our satellite theater. Hi, guys. Can we just yell everyone in here for our satellite theater? See, basically, I was talking to those guys over there. And that's the theater if you just want to go, like, you know, kick your shoes off, maybe sit in the back row, slip your pants off and get comfortable. So you guys have fun, but not too much fun over there. So, but we are thrilled and delighted to have all of you today. Thank you for joining us for Easter. Really, it is our honor and privilege to have you here, especially if you are a guest, if it's your first time. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us. So it is Easter, and we are kicking off a brand new series called Heart Problems. But since it's Easter, it's one of those Sundays where I spend a lot of time thinking about the message and thinking about what I'm going to say. And I don't know, there's just a lot of pressure on it. And so I was just like, man, what do I want to talk about? What is the best way to start off an Easter service? How do I kick that off? What was this energy and excitement? And so I figured that the best way to kick off an Easter service this year was to talk about the first time that I rode in the back of a police car. So I want to share that with you guys. I was 13 years old. I was in seventh grade. And I was hanging out with some friends of mine, and we kind of lived out in the country, kind of out by Tri-Valley. That's where I went to school. That was my neck of the woods. And so right up where Tawanda Barnes and Route 150 meet was where me and my friends were hanging out one nice summer evening. It was dark, but the weather was great, and we were just walking around, and cars were passing as people were driving home from work. And as we were walking up and down the road, one of my friends said, "Hey, Chris, I dare you to moon the next car that comes by." And I said, "Dude, you are crazy. I am not doing that." He's like, "Come on, you chicken. Are you sissy? I dare you." And I said, "Okay, I'll do it if you do it first." And he's like, "Okay." So he gets up and he's just, okay, just, I mean, for the record, this is where me and my other friend are. There's three of us. We are hiding behind a bush, you know, next to the road, watching him. And he's just standing by the side of the street waiting for a car to come by. And we're going, "Oh gosh, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be hilarious." And pretty soon we see these headlights kind of come up over the hill. And they're coming closer, and my friend, he's walking on the street and just casually looking behind him to see when his car's going to get close. And as the car gets, like, within, like, I don't know, 25, 30 feet from him, he drops his pants really quick, and he flashes his car, and we are just, "Oh, no!" And he pulls his pants up, and we just sprint. I mean, we are sprinting away from the road as fast as we can because we are not going to get caught. And it's that type of deal where if you've ever done something crazy when you're a kid, where you're, like, running, and you're laughing, and you can't breathe all at the same time, and it's just like, that kind of, like, awkward, weird noise. And we're just running, and we run, like, 200 yards away from the road. We crash behind some trees or in some bushes so no one can find us in case the driver of the car is so mad he's going to follow us, which is also one of those things when you're a junior high kid, you think everything you do that someone's going to chase you for it. And so that was us. We're hiding in the bush, just laughing hysterically, thinking, "Oh, that was so awesome. He mooned a car." So I was like, "Okay, you know what? Guys, I can do this. I can do this thing." So we went back up to the road, and they kind of hid in the ditch back where some bushes were. And I got up next to the road, and I'm like, "Okay, get my game face on, getting ready for this." I'm shaking it out, and I'm thinking this through strategically. What is the best way to moon a car when they come by and still be able to get your pants up quickly so that you can run as fast as you can? And here's my strategy. I figure this. I have kind of a long shirt on, and so I'm going to pre-drop my pants. And so I get them good and low, but I got my shirt dropped down so that I'm not going to pull my pants down. I'm just going to pull my shirt up. It's genius. I've thought this thing through, and I'm standing next to the road. My pants are down, but my shirt is down, so nobody is the wiser. And then I see it. The headlights coming up over the hill. And I'm like, "Oh, here we go. This is going to be so funny. This is going to be great." And the car's getting closer, and I'm getting nervous. I'm, "Okay, here we go." And when the car is like 30 to 40 feet away from me, I throw my shirt up. And I'm just like, in my heart, I'm like, "I'm the coolest in the world." And just, I'm like, "Yeah." And no sooner do I pull my shirt up and exposing my bare behind to the car behind me, but a gigantic spotlight goes poof. I do this. I'm blinded. I throw my pants up. I drop my shirt. And as I'm getting ready to run, these colored lights go, and I hear this, whoop, whoop. And it is a cop. So I throw my pants up and I just sprint. And my two other friends, we are just going. And so I was pretty fast as a kid. I'm pretty fast now. I like to challenge people to a foot race. If you want to race me after service, let's do this in the parking lot. But I was quick. And so me and one of my friends, we're just going. And I blow past them. They had a head start. And I was just leaving them in my dust. And I am gone. And here's the thing. God's honest truth. There is no way anyone could have caught me. No way. I was gone. I turned into like, I had like wings on my feet that just popped up. I was gone. And as I'm running away, feeling confident that I just pulled this off, I hear from the distance behind, "Chris, stop." And I stop and I turn around. And one of my idiot friends did not run away from the cop. So I have one friend, he's gone, and he's got to be just breathing a sigh of relief. I'm there running, and I stop, and there's this idiot friend back there, and he stopped, and he's standing by this cop car, and the lights are lit up, and he's yelling my name, "Chris, stop." Now, I feel like at this point, realize I'm 13 years old, you know, but in my mind, I'm picturing like them putting him in an interrogation room with a light over his face, and they're breaking him, "You want a drink of water? Well, you can't, son, splash until you tell us who the culprit was." And so that's how I'm envisioning this. I'm like, shoot, I'm busted. He's going to rat me out. So I turn around and I start this long walk back to the police car. And as I'm walking, I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do? I am busted. What do I say? What do I do? And I get up there. And this is the worst part, I think, is my idiot friend who stopped. The cop, he's like, "Okay, you go home, son." He sends that kid home. And he takes me, he puts me in the back of the cop car, and he just tears into me. "Son, I don't know what you think you were doing, but that was completely inappropriate. Tell me where you live. We're going to take you to your parents right now, and we're going to drive you home, and I'm going to tell them what you did, and son, you are in big trouble." And I'm like, I'm at that, like, again, I'm 13, and I'm a boy, and so I want to be tough, and I want to puff my chest up, but I'm, like, really trying to suck the tears back in because I'm like, I know I'm busted. And so he drives me home in the back of the cop car. He pulls me into my driveway and he is stern. The only way he could be sterner is if he pulled out like a taser and just had it on alert, ready to tase me. That's the only way he could have been more hardcore. We get to my house and he opens because he has to let me out of the back of the cop car because I'm a criminal, you know. He pulls me out and he walks me to the front door and boom, 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 boom. He bangs on the door of my house. And I'm like, I don't think my parents are home right now. And he turns to me and he just gets right in my face, finger in my face. He says, "Son, you better tell your parents what you did because I'm coming back tomorrow and we're going to deal with this then." And I said, okay, my heart's just pumping out of my chest. So I go into the house. I'm not sure my parents were probably off doing something awesome like parents of junior high kids can do because they can stay home by themselves. And I go into the house and I just sit on the steps in front of the door. And I'm working through my mind. What am I going to say? What am I going to tell my parents happened? How do I justify this? And then I'm working through all the consequences. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to lose everything? Are my parents going to literally just take away everything from me and give me a bed, a sheet, and maybe a pillow? That's the rest of my life. That's what I'm going to have. And I'm thinking through all this stuff and I'm just getting panicked and emotional. I sit on the steps for maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. And then I hear a car pull up in the driveway and it's crunching on the gravel. I'm like, okay. For the second time in the night, I'm like, here we go. We're going to do this. And they open the door. And as soon as I open the door, I stand up. And all of a sudden, like, I'm not tough anymore. My lip just starts to go. And I'm like, I need to tell you guys something. They're barely in the house. I don't even know if the door is closed at this point. They're just standing in the doorway. And I'm like, and I know. Here's the thing. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to tell them what happened. And they are going to flip their lids. Okay? They are going to lose it. And, you know, they're... smoke is going to come out of their ears. Their heads are going to pop off. And I am a dead man. And I go, "Mom, I'm going to cop." And I got caught and he's going to come back tomorrow. And there's this like an eternity of silence as they look at me. And then they look at each other. And then they look back at me. And then they begin to laugh hysterically. And I'm like, what? It was the funniest thing that they'd probably ever heard. Okay, and here's the worst part. The worst part is this. That cop never came back. He is a liar. And the fact that he lied, it prevented me from lying. But I will tell you, he is a liar and he deserves punishment. But here's the thing about this story, though. Like, at the end of the day, and this is God's honest truth. It's not my fault that I got caught. It's my idiot friend who stayed behind and didn't run away like he should have and went, Chris, stop. And I knew he's going to rat me out. It was his fault that I got busted. And I looked back at that and I was like, thank God that I didn't get me in any trouble at that moment. Who knows if my parents took it out on me in other ways. Maybe they did. Parents do that. But I, you know, thank God that I did not get into more trouble than I did. But man, I never would have got caught had he not just run away like a smart junior high kid who's trying to get away from the police. I wouldn't have been caught. And so I look back at that and I'm like, he's the one to blame. He's responsible. It's his fault. And I think we can all kind of relate to that, right? Because we all are comfortable and familiar with playing the blame game. Whenever stuff bad happens, whenever something bad or an issue comes up in life or something negative occurs to us or happens to us, we all kind of get into this blame game mode. And the reason we do that is because we want to know who's responsible. I want to know who's responsible for this, and they need to pay. They need to pay up because this is their fault. They caused this. They're responsible. You know, it's the kids are the best at this. Like, my kids are awesome at this because it's like, you know, they start playing, and then they start to play rough, and then someone gets hurt, and all of a sudden there's tears, and, you know, mom and dad, you come in, and you're like, what happened? Why is your sister over there crying? You're like, I don't know. I was just over here and I was just wildly flailing around my punching fists and she put her face like right in front of one of my punching fists. Why would you put your face in front of my wildly flailing punching fists and make me hit you? That's so dumb. You know, it's her fault. She did that. Kids are great at this. My daughter is over in the satellite theater and she should be glad that she's over there right now. But my kids, yes, we have a dog. We just got a new puppy, you know, several months ago. And when we got this dog, there was some accident issues where this dog would poop and pee on the floor. And it was like, it just drove me crazy. I can't stand it when there's accidents in the house by these stupid dogs. And so, we thought it was okay, but then the dog started doing it again. And I was just fed up with it. And so I did this. I called all the kids in. I said, guys, here's the thing. This is our fault that this is happening, okay? It's not the dog's fault. It's our fault. We're not paying attention to the dog. We're not letting the dog out the way we're supposed to. So it's our fault. So here's what's going to happen. You guys are home. You're with the dog. It's your fault. So this is what's going to happen. If I find an accident in this house from that dog, you lose electronics for a day. No questions. I'm not even going to ask anything. I don't even care when it happened or what. You lose your electronics for a day. And if there's another one that happens after that, you lose it for 2 days. Now, my kids live and die by their electronics. Like, you'll have to pry that cell phone out of my teenage daughter's cold, dead hands, you know, to get at it. They love their electronics. So this was a big threat. And so at first, it worked really well. They were all over the dogs, watching them and taking care of them. But then there's an accident. So I'm like, okay, hand them over. Give them over. Oh, they hand it over and they're sad for a day. Then I give them back. Oh, another accident. I'm like, oh. And here's the thing. At first, they're like, man, we got to do better. But eventually, here's what happened after 3 or 4 times, is I would find an accident and say, guys, hand over your electronics. And he'd go, well, Dad, wait a minute. I don't even know if I was in the room. And Calvin was in this room when it happened. And I really think this is his fault. And I'm like, guys, listen, it's your fault. But here's what my kids begin to do, is they begin to like put on their like crime scene investigator hats and like begin to like, okay, but Dad, here's the thing. Based on the trajectory of the angle of approach and, you know, the temperature, I can deduce that the time frame that this happened between 2:13 and 2:15. And Dad, between 2:10 and 2:17, I was in the bathroom. I was taking a shower. And so there's no way I could be responsible for this. And they're just like, they're finding any excuse they can to prove that it's not their fault. Because I was here, he was here. It's their fault. It's your fault. It's my fault. And I'll just be honest, it's happened when we've been home too. So, you know, I'm sorry, kids. I own some of it. But I'll still take away your electronics. So watch the dogs. But man, we want to know who's at fault. We want to know who's to blame because we don't want to take that blame. And we want to get to the bottom of things so that we can figure out what's going on. We want to understand who's responsible. We want to understand what's broken. And when things are broken, we want to get to the root of the issue and find out why. We can see that just this week, there is a plane crash in the French Alps this week. And literally the day it happened, I'm watching the news. This thing has just happened within the last hours. And people on the news are talking about who did it? Who's responsible? Was it terrorists? Was it mechanical failure? And before that day was even gone on the news, they're reporting that it was probably the co-pilot who had done this. And the reason that happened is because we want answers. We've got to know who's to blame. We've got to know who's responsible. And we begin to find out that same night that it was the co-pilot. See, we all have issues. We all have problems. We all have bad things that happen to us, frustrations that come up, or maybe things that we've dealt with for years that we can't seem to figure out on our own. And at the end of the day, we need to get a grasp on them, and we want to find out what causes those things. But before we can fix those issues, we have to find out what is at the root. What starts these things? We got to find out what the cause is and who is responsible. And so today I want to start out talking to you in our heart problem series about Proverbs 4, chapter 23. Now, this is going to be the verse that's kind of the series verse. This is going to be the verse that kind of guides us through this. And this is what the writer of Proverbs says. He says, "Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life." Guard your heart above all else because it determines the course of your life. So he's saying, listen, you have to guard and protect your heart. Why? Why do you need to guard and protect your heart? Because your heart is the determiner of what's going to happen to you in life. Your heart is, it determines the course. Everything that we do, everything that we say, every choice we make, it flows from our heart. Another translation says this, that from the heart flow the issues of life. It means this, is that the issues that we face in life, that those things, the things we deal with, that they start somewhere in our heart. And so really, this is just kind of this the main headline of today's message. That's this, that the heart is the start. Your heart is the start. You want to play the blame game. You want to dig down and find the root cause. Here's today's takeaway. Your heart is the start. Okay, so check this out. We make choices, right? We make choices every single day. We're presented with options. We're presented with maybe a choice to eat an apple or a Twinkie for a snack. And we can look at that apple and go, wow, I know that's good for me, but gross, because there's a Twinkie over here. And that Twinkie, we know it's not good for us. We know it's not something we should be eating. We know that like Twinkies and cockroaches are the only things that will survive a nuclear holocaust. But we're like, you know what? I really want it. I really want it. And so, because our heart wants to eat this Twinkie, we take it. See, the course of our life is determined by our heart. And it's good or bad. Whether your life is good, whether your life is bad, whether the paths that your life takes is good or bad, our heart determines the course and the outcome of what we're going to be doing. And so, you know, the question, are you going to be a good or a bad parent? Your heart decides that. Are you promotable and respected at work? Are you the type of person that everyone looks at and go, man, I love having him work here. He's a great employee. You know, are you promotable? That starts in your heart. Are you the type of person who's always struggling to make it? Maybe you're struggling financially and you got massive amounts of debt, or maybe you're financially healthy. It's determined in your heart. Your relationships, man, your relationships are strong and they're meaningful and they're deep. Or maybe you have just difficult relationships that you struggle with all the time, and there's constant tension and fighting, and you don't understand why. It starts in your heart. So if your heart is responsible and it influences everything you touch, everything you do, every relationship that you have, and every success or failure that you will face in life, how do we know if we have a good heart or a bad heart? How do we tell if our heart is good or if we have heart problems? Now, even as I say this, I know that some of you guys are already struggling with this a little bit because you've got issues and problems in life, and you've busted out your own CSI hat, and you're kind of tracing those things back. And as you track through the problems and frustrations and issues of your life, you're like tracking those to a person, right? And you're going, see, Chris, I don't know, because when I look at this, I track it back to this person because they wronged me. Okay, this person hurt me. They lied to me. This person cheated on me. This person did or said something that was, they never should have done it. And if they had never done or said any of this, then I wouldn't be in this position. Well, maybe our hearts are good and maybe our hearts are bad. But the truth is that we don't know if we don't know. And so what I want to do today, this morning, as we kick off our heart problem series, I want to talk about how to diagnose a heart problem. How can you tell if your heart is good or your heart is bad? How do you diagnose that? So what we're going to do is we're going to look at a story from the life of Jesus. Now, Jesus, when he was walking around doing his ministry, he had tons and tons of people who followed him and thought he was great. They loved his teaching. They thought it was engaging. It was challenging. It was drastically different than any of the religious teachings that they'd heard back in his time. But there are also these religious leaders called Pharisees at the time. Now, Jesus was Jewish and the Pharisees were Jewish as well. And the way that Jesus taught and the things that Jesus taught were in some ways contradictory to the things that the Pharisees valued and thought were important. And as a result, people were beginning to follow Jesus and listen to Jesus and believe what Jesus was saying instead of believing what the religious leaders were saying and what they were saying that people should do and how they should live. And the thing is, the religious leaders at the time, they were a political power. The Jewish religious leaders were, they were at the top of Jewish society. If you were a Pharisee, then you were the man. You had power, you had money, you had authority. And now all of a sudden there's this, you know, no-name uneducated guy from some backwater of Galilee who's coming in and he's telling people all these other things and he's challenging us and we're risking losing our authority, we're risking losing power. It could cost us money if people begin to follow him instead of us. And so the Pharisees hated Jesus. They hated him, and they were looking for any way that they possibly could to bring him down. In fact, they would always follow him around and be at the edges of where he was teaching, just listening to what he was saying. And they would always try to throw in little questions, little challenges to Jesus, just little darts, little spears that they could throw at him to try and find ways to trip Jesus up. And we can find Jesus here. Jesus is going around, and he's teaching, and he's healing people. He's healing people who are sick. He's doing miraculous things. The New Testament tells us that he's casting demons out of people. And the Pharisees are watching this happening. And the Pharisees see this. And they're like, oh, you know what? We've got this now. We've got Jesus figured out. You see, Jesus is doing these things because he's aligned with Satan. And Jesus is using the power of Satan to do this stuff so he can just attract attention to himself. And they're trying to convince people that Jesus is evil. And all these miracles that he's doing are powered by the devil. And Jesus, you know, Jesus was kind of a smart guy. He kind of could read people. Also, he's the Son of God. And so that's kind of a thing that might help you realize what people are thinking sometimes. But in the account in Matthew, it tells us this, that Jesus, he knew what the Pharisees were thinking and he knew what they were telling people. He knew that they were going around in circles muttering, hey, I don't know about this. I think he's working with the devil. Maybe there's a pentagram on his back. I don't know. You know, they're just working this angle. And Jesus knows it and he catches it. And he kind of stops what he's doing with the teachings, and he stops the healings, and he gets everybody's attention. And this is what Matthew, who is one of Jesus' disciples, Matthew was a guy who lived with Jesus, worked with Jesus, followed Jesus around, and then after Jesus died and was resurrected, Matthew wrote down Jesus' story. This is Matthew's account of what happened in Matthew 12:33. So Jesus, he knows the Pharisees are muttering. He knows that they're saying he's evil, and he's not, that he's, you know, his power comes from evil source. And this is what Jesus does. Jesus calls Christ and says, hey, listen. He says, I want you guys to know something. A tree is identified by its fruit. If a tree is good, its fruit will be good. And if a tree is bad, its fruit will be bad. So now Jesus talked a lot about fruit. And I think that, you know, they live in kind of an agrarian culture. There's a lot of farmers. And so people understood the idea of crops as food. And so Jesus talked a lot about fruit. And he equated fruit and fruitfulness to spiritual matters. And there's a spiritual principle in what Jesus is saying here. And that's this. It's look at the fruit. Okay, look at the fruit of something, and that will determine whether something is good or whether something is bad. If the fruit of a person's life is good, then that person is good. And if the fruit of a person's life is bad, then that person is bad. So let's think about this. What makes a person good? Just think about this in your mind. If someone were to come and you say, hey, am I a good person? What would you say makes a person good? You know, we would say things like, well, you know, they're kind to people. They think about others. You know, they help people in need. At a minimum, they don't hurt other people. They probably give to charity. And they're someone who thinks about other people first. I would say that's probably someone who is good. Let's put that in a religious context. What makes a good religious person? A good religious person is, someone who reads their Bible and knows it, has Bible verses memorized. They pray a lot. That's probably a good person. They're probably generous. They probably, you know, give money. And time. That would make a good religious person, right? And so Jesus says, listen, if a tree is good, its fruit's good. If a tree is bad, its fruit's bad. And the Pharisees, probably if Jesus had stopped right here, they'd probably be fine. Because on the surface of their lives, they were good. I mean, Pharisees as religious leaders, they'd memorized entire chunks of Old Testament scriptures. I mean, they just memorized massive amounts of it. So they knew scripture. The Pharisees were people who prayed publicly, loudly, and often. Man, these guys, they would stand on street corners and pray their loud prayers because they wanted everyone to see them praying, to know what good prayers they were. I mean, this was them. I mean, they were that. These guys were so careful to tithe their money that they would literally count down to the smallest percentage to make sure that they were giving the precise amount and no more or no less than they were supposed to in order to line up with Old Testament law. I mean, these guys on paper were good. And had Jesus stopped at this point, then I think that probably they would have felt just fine about themselves. But Jesus doesn't stop. Look what Jesus says about the Pharisees and the religious leaders. He says, listen, you brood of snakes. I mean, when somebody steps up in your face and says, you're a snake, that's not like a compliment. It's like, hey, buddy, high five, snakey. It doesn't work that way. You brood of snakes. How could evil men like you speak what is good and right? So Jesus is like, listen, a good tree produces good fruit. A bad tree produces bad fruit. And you know what you are? You're evil. You guys are bad. You guys are bad trees and your fruit is bad. And in spite of all your outward spiritual trappings, in spite of all the outward goodness that you guys exude and present to the world, in spite of all the good things and the good deeds, in spite of all those things, inside you have bad hearts. Inside you're evil. And why? Why? And so let's look at what Jesus says. He continues on. You brood of snakes, how could evil men like you speak what is good and right? And he continues and says this, for whatever is in your heart determines what you say. Whatever is in your heart determines what you say. Jesus calls out the Pharisees for having heart problems. I mean, look at the difference between Jesus and the Pharisees. Jesus is going around and Jesus is healing people. He's helping people. He's teaching people how to be close to God. And the outcomes, the results of his ministry are good things. And yet the Pharisees, these guys are going around, they're just following Jesus and they're throwing firebombs at him. They're just trying to tear him down. They're backbiting, they're gossiping. They're doing anything they can to tear Jesus down. And I think that what Jesus is saying when he calls them what they are, when he calls them evil men, and then he proceeds to tell them how he knows, in doing so, he's telling them how to diagnose the fact that they have a heart problem. And he's showing us how to diagnose how we have heart problems as well. And he continues on. He says, listen, you guys are evil. You guys are snakes. And this is what he follows up with in Matthew 12, 35. A good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart. And an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. There's another passage in the book of Luke, which is another gospel account of Jesus. Luke was a guy who followed the apostle Peter. And Peter told Luke everything he knew about Jesus. And Luke went and interviewed tons and tons of people like a reporter to find out exactly the story of Jesus. And so Luke writes the same account of this story. And this is how Luke says it in Luke 6:45. He says, what you say flows from what is in your heart. What you say flows from what is in your heart. A different Bible translation puts it this way, that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So what's in your heart? It's going to overflow out and it's going to come out in the things you say. Out of the overflow of your heart, the mouth speaks. The heart, your heart, is the start. And we can diagnose whether or not we have heart problems by the things that overflow out of our hearts. And here's the thing, good things can overflow out of hearts or bad things can overflow out of our hearts. Think about things that overflow. Like one of my favorite things that overflows is a chocolate fountain. Dude, like if you go to Golden Corral, you're going to pay for it for a couple days. But man, I love going to Golden Corral and just eating. And they got this chocolate fountain and you can go and you can just stick anything on a stick and put it under that chocolate fountain. Marshmallows, cookies. Dude, I'll go get a pork chop and put it under that chocolate fountain because it's just awesome. And the way it works is that the chocolate just gets pumped up to the top and it overflows out of the top and it comes down and just this delicious, wonderful, like waterfall of chocolate. So a chocolate fountain is something that overflows. A spring is something that overflows. It's water that literally, it bubbles up from out of the ground in a spot. And then as it bubbles up out of the ground, it flows out into a stream. But the spring is like some of the freshest and cleanest and purest water that you can find. So out of our heart can overflow good things. But I mean, other things that overflow, a volcano overflows. Volcanoes overflow, but nobody's going, hey, I wish there was a volcano that was just bursting into overflowing in my neighborhood. Because volcanoes burn and they hurt. And they damage things and they destroy things. And there are things in our lives that can pour out and come out of our mouths and things that we say that can hurt people and that can burn people and that can damage people. This is gross, but toilets overflow. Anybody want it to be said to them that like you got a toilet heart? Not me. But think about it. There's people and the things that we say, the things that come out of us, that they're just as disgusting to people around us as what might overflow in a toilet. And so my question, do I want to be a chocolate fountain that people want to put delicious things in and eat? Or do I want to be an overflowing toilet that people want to run away from and say, that's your responsibility. You need to fix that right now. I know what I want. I want to overflow with good things. But the only way we can do that is to address and fix the heart problems in our lives. Now, we're talking about things that we say being the things that diagnose our heart issues, right? And now is, again, this is a point at which there's some of us are starting to question what I'm talking about because, and you're thinking, well, Chris, you don't know, okay? You don't know why I'm saying what I'm saying. You don't know the context of these conversations. You don't know the context of some of the things that I've had to say to other people. You know, you don't know what they said to me first, okay? And so you can't judge me on this. And you know what, Chris? I just grew up in a hot-blooded Italian family, and that's just how we talk. And, you know, people need to get on board with it and deal with it or not. And, I was just raised to speak my mind, and if people got a problem with that, well, then they can just deal with it. They got a problem with that. That's just me. That's just, you know, that's just how I live. Those people, they needed to know they were wrong. You know, that person cut me off in traffic, so I needed to pull them over on the side of the road, and I needed to open up their door and drag them out by their collar and, you know, put my foot on their neck and hold them to the ground and say, sir, you shouldn't have done that, in very stern terms. You know, they needed to be taught. They needed to know that. Here's the thing. When we talk about, when we try to excuse and find ways to justify what overflows out of our hearts and the things that we say, we need to think about it in context of Jesus. Of what would Jesus say? What would Jesus, WWJD, right? What would Jesus have said in this moment? And there's a moment where I think that what's in Jesus's heart pours out and is so clear and so powerful for us. And it's such a great example of, I think, the life that he wants us to lead. And I think it's a great example of the heart that he wants us to experience. And this is where it takes place in Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23, Jesus has walked with a cross on his back to the top of a hill where he's going to be crucified. And the Roman soldiers, after having beaten him, after having stripped him down, after having stuck a crown of thorns into his head, he's bleeding, he's exhausted, he's in incredible pain. He's been nailed to a cross, and that cross is erected, and the soldiers are around him, and they're just playing dice and gambling for the rest of his clothes, whatever they can take off of his body. And these are the words that come out of Jesus' heart. In Luke 23:34, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Let me ask you a question. What would you say to someone who is getting ready to kill you? What would you say if you knew that someone was squared up and they were getting ready to literally murder you? What are the words that would come out of your mouth? How would you respond if someone wanted to beat you, stab you to death? What are the things that you would say to that person? We know what Jesus would say because Jesus, as he's hanging on the cross, is looking down at the people who are slowly murdering him. He's looking down at the men who have nailed him to a wooden cross, who are mocking him, who are watching him bleed, who are watching him struggle for breath. The men who are currently in the act of murdering Jesus, and he looks down, and his last words about those men are this, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. See, when Jesus was in his darkest, weakest, and most painful moments, his heart overflowed. His heart overflowed. Your heart is the start. Your heart is the start. Now, maybe this morning, hearing this, you can recognize, you know what, Chris, maybe I have a heart problem. Maybe listening to this, I can honestly diagnose the fact that I think maybe I have some heart issues. And so the question now is, how do we fix it? How do you make that right? How do you address a heart problem and make it better? And I can tell you, the first answer is this. You can't fix a heart problem by doing good things. Pharisees tried that. The Pharisees were experts at doing good things. They were experts at doing good deeds. And Jesus looked at them square in the face and he said, you are evil. Your hearts are overflowing with evil. Good deeds won't fix this. Your heart can't be fixed by trying harder or doing better, or doing more outwardly good things. See, your heart is the start of everything you say, it's the start of everything you do, and it's the start of everything you choose. And there's only one way to fix a heart problem. And we're told this in Romans chapter 10, verses 9 through 10. And this is what the writer says. It says, if you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. Because it's by believing in your heart that you are made right with God. A heart problem can be only addressed with a heart solution. And the only heart solution that can work for us is Jesus. And the reason that heart solution works for us is because of the message of Easter. It's because Jesus, though he suffered and he died so that he could take the penalty for our sins, that Jesus was raised from the dead. It's the heart of everything. It's the center of everything that we believe. It's the center of everything that we know about a life of following him. And here in Romans 10, we're told this, that the center of fixing a heart issue, the center of being made right with God, is believing in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead. And in believing that the power that raised Jesus from the dead is available for you, to raise you, to fix you, to take your broken and damaged heart and make it right. You see, Jesus wasn't raised from the dead to wow the world with, you know, how cool it was. I mean, Jesus only appeared to about 500 or so people after he was raised from the dead, is what the New Testament tells us. So there's only 500 or so people that Jesus physically appeared to after he was raised from the dead. And there are thousands of people who followed him when he was alive. Thousands and thousands who wanted to hear what he had to say. But Jesus deliberately only appeared to a small number of those. And the reason he did that was because Jesus' goal wasn't to, you know, stand up on top of the mountain and go, look at me, I'm alive, I'm amazing. You know, I'm the bomb. His goal was not about that. His goal was to fix our broken hearts. His goal was long term. It was for the power of his resurrection to be made real in our lives. Not for him to be cheered and looked at in that moment, but for Jesus to take a seat in our lives for all of eternity and throughout history. And this is what Ezekiel 36:26 says. And I think this is a verse that many of you are going to want to hold on to as you leave today, because this is something that is tangible and it's real. And this is what God can and wants to do in you today. And this is what God says. And I will give you a new heart. I will put a new spirit within you. I will take out your stony, stubborn heart, and I will give you a tender and responsive heart. Jesus is saying this. He's saying, listen, I know you have a bad heart. I know it's broken, because all of our hearts have been broken and damaged by sin. It's just the reality. And he's saying this. He's saying, I want to take that broken and damaged heart out of you, and I want to give you a brand new heart that's thriving and that's alive and that's full of hope and that's full of joy and love and peace. And it's a heart that you don't have to strive and struggle anymore. It's a heart where you can just know that by following me and believing in me, that everything for you can change today. Because God knows that stony and broken and faulty heart that you have inside, it can't carry you through life the way that you want it to. And it can't give you the best life that you could ever live. But Jesus, the heart that he can give you, when you believe, when you say, I'm ready to take a heart solution, I'm ready to believe in Jesus today, I'm ready to believe in the power of the resurrection that we celebrate on Easter, and the power that that has to transform me from the inside out. And that all of a sudden, the stuff that's overflowing out of my heart is going to change, not because I try to manage it better, not because I try to use willpower to control what I'm saying, but because my heart is different. My heart has been changed. Jesus' death was not just about forgiving us and making us right, but it's about resurrection and change. And you have a heart that God wants to resurrect, and he wants to raise it up. And the question today is this, is that if you have a heart problem, are you willing to trust Jesus today to give you a new one? Are you willing to trust Jesus today to fix it? Like, everybody bow your heads and close your eyes. And as we close today, I'm just going to ask for a very quick response. And here's the thing. There's people in this room right now, and you're not followers of Jesus. And that's great. That's fine. You know, you came in and, you know, you came because it's Easter, and, you know, that's totally cool. Maybe you're not into the spiritual thing. Maybe you're not into religion. Maybe you're not in a church. Maybe you've been burned in the past by church, and it's just not something you ever want, but you came because somebody dragged you. But even as you're sitting in your seat right now, there's this sense that something's stirring inside you. And even if you were to be totally honest, you would just admit, Chris, I know I have heart problems. I know I do. Everything you've talked about has completely diagnosed that in me. I want to challenge and encourage you today. Today is a day that you can respond to what Jesus wants to do in your life. And today, if that's you, if today you know you have a heart problem and you can't live with it anymore, and you've not been a follower of Jesus, you know, church has not been your thing, but today you're going to say, you know what, Chris, I can't do this on my own anymore. I need a new heart. I need this change, and I need God to create something new in me. Everyone's eyes are closed. No one's looking around. Just very quickly, if that's you, I want to pray for you, and I just want to know who you are. That's it. And if that's you, just slip your hand up right now. Chris, I need Jesus in my life right now. I need Jesus to give me a new heart. Just slip your hand up right now. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Maybe you're in this room and you're a follower of Jesus. And maybe you didn't even know you had heart problems because you live a pretty good life. And you're hearing this and you're going, man, I love Jesus. I want more of Jesus. But now I need more of Jesus because I can't go on with a bad and broken heart anymore. I need these things fixed in my life. And that's you. And you're like, Chris, I got to change this. God's got to change this in me. And you're like, Chris, I got a heart problem. If that's you, just slip your hand right now. I just want to pray for you. I've got heart problems. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for everyone who's lifted their hand this morning. And first, I pray for my friends who've lifted their hands and said, Chris, I have heart problems. And I love Jesus. I love God. But I can hear the things that I say and I can hear the things coming out of me and I can diagnose the fact that I'm not right. And so Lord, I pray with them. I pray, Jesus, that you do work in their hearts, a restoring work and a healing work. And God, I pray that the things that flow out of them will be things that bring you honor and glory and joy. And they would not be things that hurt or damage or wound. They would be things that bring unity and peace and joy in life. And God, I pray in their lives that you would bring unity and peace and joy in life. And I pray for those who lifted their hands today and said, Chris, I want to become a follower of Jesus today. Maybe I don't even know what it's about. Maybe I don't even know all the implications, but I know this, that as I'm sitting in this room, that God is calling me and he's drawing me and I need to respond. So I pray with them, Lord. I pray these words. I pray, God, that you would forgive us of our sin. Jesus, I thank you that you died on a cross so that we could be forgiven. And Jesus, I thank you that you were raised from the dead and that by your resurrection, that by the fact that you were raised from the dead and believing that in my heart, that everything can change for me. And so Lord, I believing that you died, believing that you rose and believing that you want to give me a new heart. Lord, I surrender my heart to you today. I pray that you would take what's broken and damaged and not working. And I pray that you would make me right, make me whole. And God, give me a new, clean, pure, transformed heart. God, I thank you today that you will. And I thank you today that you are. Father, we love you. And we are so grateful, Jesus, for your suffering. But we're even more grateful for your life. The life that you were raised to. The life that you offer us. The life that has the power to transform us. Lord, we thank you and we praise you. We pray all of these things in your holy name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.